is the Tom Hartman Program.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here in a snowy Washington, D.C. I was hoping winter was over, but it's not February yet. Was it Sandberg? No, it wasn't. Who said winter is the cruelest, or February is the cruelest month? It's one of those late 19th, early 20th century poets. Anyway, in fact, yesterday was supposed to be the most depressing day of the year. That's T.S. Eliot. Said February is the cruelest month. Thank you. Thank you, Shano. So it wasn't even an American poet. I was thinking the American poets. He was British. Thank you, Danielle. So last night the president gave his State of the Union address, and I have some thoughts on it. I want to share some pieces of it with you, there's some interesting stuff peripheral to that too, and we'll talk about that throughout the next 3 hours. Greg Palast is going to drop by in our second hour, and Kerry Lucas is going to drop by in our third hour. We're going to talk about some specific issues, like, you know, what's going on in the case of Greg Palast with the whole he refers to it as the European leper colony. And the reason why what's going on in Greece and Europe is of great consequence is because soon to play in a theater near you, right? This is coming to America, as it was here in America during the Bush administration, these conservative economic policies. And Kerry Lucas, we're going to be talking about net neutrality. But peripheral to this, I don't know if you've seen this. It's kind of gone viral on YouTube. Shepard Smith, the Fox reporter, the Fox News reporter. I call it Fox so-called news. Apparently, at the tables, the dinner tables where they have the name places for the people who are sitting there, you know, before the State of the Union, it said NBC News, CBS News, ABC News, Fox. No news. Right. Perfect. Now, it was probably just a mistake, but if it wasn't, man, I am with that. I am with the White House on doing that. Because Fox, you know, MSNBC doesn't call themselves MSNBC News unless they're doing a newscast. They have opinion shows. Rachel Maddow is an opinion show. Ed Schultz is an opinion show. Lawrence is an opinion. This show is an opinion show. I don't pretend that this is a news show. I mean, I talk about the news. Rush Limbaugh is not a news show. He's an opinion show. So why not own up to it? Well, because Fox wants people to live in their own little Fox universe. And now they've got their little website, you know, where people can kind of hang out and just, you know, and everybody gets insulated from reality. So there's that, number one. Number two, the myth that Obama is turning to the left. Right? I don't know if you caught Joni Ernst's, the pig castrator from Iowa. If you caught her Republican rebuttal, boy, did somebody teach her how to smile while she talks. I tried to learn that once, you know, when I first started in television. It's like, learn how to smile while you talk so that you're always smiling while you're talking. And it just came across as so. I was looking at her and I was going, wow, Stepford Wives. And I said that to Louise. And then I thought, you know, is that a sexist statement or not? I'm not sure, but it was. Maybe men do that too. I suppose. I don't know. I'm not even sure most women do that. It was odd. But that's, you know, that's kind of catty and tacky and gossipy and whatever. And frankly, beneath me to go into that. My apologies, Jody. I shouldn't pick on the way that you did your presentation. At least you didn't drink the tea that Marco Rubio gave you. You know, we were all speculating yesterday. What's Rubio going to give her? Right? Is he going to give her like atropine or scopolamine? You know, the stuff that used to be in the old contact cold capsules that they make out of crab apples that dry you up so much that you get dry mouth, so that you've got to lurch and grab a glass of water in the middle of your talk. Or was he going to do the old frat boy joke, you know, put some X-Lax in her chocolate cake, or, you know, what was it going to be? You know, how is Marco Rubio going to blow this up? But apparently he didn't. I don't know. Apparently he didn't. She did a fine delivery. What's particularly interesting is that Joni Ernst, Number one, her family's taken over $460,000 in federal welfare checks. Welfare for farmers. You know, corn supports and price supports and, you know, basically all the various kinds of welfare that big, you know, corporate farmers get. She told this story about how she had to put bread bags over her shoes as a little kid to go to school in the winter, and it didn't feel so bad because all the other little kids do. And it was a story about, you know, basically poverty in rural America. It's a very moving story. And I'm perfectly willing to assume that it was true. I mean, this was apparently before the farm price support started kicking in. I guess, I don't know how old she is, but, you know, maybe in any case. But now that she's a senator, if she was trying to say, this is what I don't get, it's one of two messages. Just think about this for a minute. She was delivering really one of two messages. Either one was, I grew up in poverty, and I made it, so anybody can make it in America. That's a nice message. It's unfortunately no longer true. I mean, yes, you can make it as a right-wing commentator, as a right-wing politician, because there are billionaires who will give you a lot of money if you say the right things. But you can't, you know, America is now the least socially mobile country of all the 34 developed countries in the world, the OECD nations. We are the least socially mobile. In other words, we are the country in which you are least likely to grow up in poverty and end up in the middle class. In the case of Joni Ernst now, the upper middle class, with all the money that her family is getting from the federal government. And, of course, she didn't mention that. She's either saying that, or she's saying, I grew up in poverty and had to put bread bags on my shoes, and you should too, and that's why I'm not going to raise the damn minimum wage. That there's virtue in growing up in poverty. Which message do you think she was trying to convey? I frankly think it's the latter, given her policy positions. Poor people shouldn't have free health care. Poor people shouldn't have a raised minimum wage. The working poor. Poor people shouldn't have, I mean, you can go down the list, right? Shouldn't have access, shouldn't have Social Security when they retire, shouldn't have Medicare when they retire. I mean, these are all official Republican positions. Either they shouldn't have them, or if they do have them, they should be delivered by some billionaire on Wall Street who's going to skim a bunch of money off the top. So, anyway, I found that fascinating. The other fascinating part about this, and then I want to get into what Obama said. I'm going to play you a couple of clips and give you some of my thoughts on it. Boy, this time flies fast. Because I haven't even got to where I intended to start, which was with what Obama said, which was a great speech. I mean, it was a great speech. There's a couple of things that I disagree with. The vast majority of it I thought was brilliant, and particularly his backhanded swipe at George W. Bush. When he said, we don't do stupid foreign policy anymore. My words, not his. But the other thing about the Joni Ernst rebuttal, the Republican rebuttal, was that it was also delivered in Spanish. And the Spanish version of it was delivered by Congressman Carlos Curbelo of Florida, a Cuban-American from Florida, who speaks Spanish. And he added into it the phrase, he added into it that Republicans want to work with the president. He said we should work through the appropriate channels to create permanent solutions for our immigration system. Right? Joni Ernst is opposed to immigration reform. In fact, she is this English-only person. She doesn't think anything should be in Spanish. So, hang on.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Apparently what this means is that when Republicans talk to Hispanics in Spanish, they say, we're all in favor of immigration reform. But when they talk to Caucasians in English, they say, nope. And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. As I should have rebooted my computer this morning. I'm waiting for my... here it goes. There's my screening software. So anyhow, that's, you know, early thoughts on the State of the Union address. And actually... I guess I haven't yet gotten to the State of the Union address. I will. But wow, the lines are slammed. People want to comment on this stuff. Let's see here. Mike in Taneyville, Missouri.
Yes,
hey,
sir.
Mike, thanks for watching Free Speech TV on Dish Network. What's on your mind?
Hey, first time caller. I've been listening for quite a while. I like the Bernie Sanders on Friday.
Thank you.
And don't feel bad about you weren't browbeaten. This is Ernst. You can tell plastic people I'm a longtime entertainer, so I can kind of read crowds and eyeballs and smiles and when you know somebody's.
Well, did you watch her delivery last night?
Oh yeah.
Did it strike Absolutely. You as odd the way that she just held this continuous smile through the whole thing?
Well, that was kind of scary, but and then the bags on the feet. I mean, you know, everybody's got the story of walking to school uphill, you know, bare feet, and walking back uphill on the way home again.
Yeah, I didn't do it with bare feet, but I actually did walk 4 miles to school every day in the snow, in Lansing, Michigan, every winter. I mean, I did it. That was middle school, you know, junior high school. I was a young teenager.
Well, yeah. And we share that in common, too, because I'm from Travers originally.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So, you know.
City, so.
Yeah.
But I enjoy your programming, and just like everybody else in the world, we don't agree on everything 100%. But as far as she goes, like I said, it's a little bit on the plastic side, and it's hard. I don't understand how people can take it 100% face value when someone's like that.
You wonder if whoever was advising her on how to do media was saying, this is how Republicans want to see their women, you know, continuously smiling, sort of Barbie doll-like. That's how a lot of the women on Fox News are, you know, as opposed
to wives.
Yeah, yeah. This is how Republicans want to see their women, so please behave this way. Or if she has internalized that, or if I'm just reading way too much into this, I don't know.
No, and my wife actually had already gone to bed, but she heard me watching that, because I watched the whole speech too, and I thought it was pretty good. I thought it really touched on a lot of subjects. And when she came on, she heard my gasp when I saw her come on.
Yeah.
She goes, "What's going on?" I said, "I think I'm in for a show."
Yeah. So do you think that when she was talking about I wore bread bags on my shoes, that she was saying you can rise out of poverty and become a senator? Or was she saying, I grew up in poverty and, you know, half of American children right now are living in poverty, and that's a good thing because it builds character?
Well, I didn't see it. It didn't work in the context of where she came. I mean, she didn't even build. It just fell in, you know. It's just like writing a story and losing a page.
Yeah.
And I didn't see where it fit in at all. I don't know. She didn't.
She didn't explain
write forward
it.
To it. Yeah. I mean, you know, this is how I grew up or, you know, I my family came from. She just jumped right in.
So then maybe the message was not all Republicans are billionaire fat cats. There's some of us who used to be poor, and we now just take money from billionaire fat cats.
Yeah.
Apparently that was her message. Mike, thanks a lot for the call. Great to hear from you, and thanks for watching Free Speech TV. We'll be back. It's 20 minutes past the hour. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. I want to get your thoughts on the State of the Union, too, in a few minutes. Let me just finish my rant here. Number one, President Obama. Well, first of all, how the middle class works. Here's clip number one, middle class economics.
Middle class economics works. Expanding opportunity works. And these policies will continue to work as long as politics don't get in the way.
In other words, Republicans.
We can't slow down businesses or put our economy at risk with government shutdowns or fiscal showdowns. We can't put the security of families at risk by taking away their health insurance or unraveling the new rules on Wall Street.
Republicans do it.
Or refighting past battles on immigration when we've got to fix a broken system.
Republicans do it.
And if a bill comes to my desk that tries to do any of these things,
from Republicans,
veto it. It will have earned my veto.
There you go. Middle-class economics works. The thing that I wish I'd heard, I wish he had been more partisan, but that's just me. I realize that this is a man who I think was speaking with absolute sincerity when he said, I see one America, and he wants to reach across the aisle. I just think he doesn't realize the level of sociopathy that he's dealing with on the other side. So, and that said, again, here is another opportunity to have said, you know, Democrats brought us Social Security, Republicans fought it. Democrats brought us Medicare, Republicans fought it and are still fighting it. Democrats brought us, you know, go through the list, the minimum wage, workplace protections, unionization, on and on and on. But instead, he said, we did. And, you know, which was great. I mean, I get it. This is the healing president. Clip number two here.
And in fact, at every moment of economic change throughout our history, this country has taken bold action to adapt to new circumstances.
No, progressives have.
And to make sure everyone gets a fair shot. We set up worker protections,
Social
Security, Medicare, Medicaid, to protect ourselves from the harshest adversity.
Democrats did all those things.
We gave our citizens schools and colleges.
Democrats did
infrastructure
things.
And the internet.
Lincoln was a Republican.
Tools they needed to go as far as their efforts and their dreams will take them.
Yeah. Lincoln actually set up a, you know, 55 or 56 land-grant colleges across the country, all free colleges. And he was a Republican. But back then, the Republicans were the liberals, right? They were the progressives. They fought slavery and all that kind of stuff. So anyhow, those are some of the things that I liked about this thing. The headlines, the commentators, the bloviators. I was channel surfing this morning and, of course, afterwards last night. And several times I heard commentators go, oh, Obama's moving to the left. His last 2 years, he's not up for re-election. He can now safely become the communist that he always was. And I'm like, left? Left? The vast majority. He's taking positions that Eisenhower in 1956 ran for president on. Eisenhower was a Republican. The 1956 Republican Party platform bragged about the fact that in the previous 4 years, the first four years of the Republican Eisenhower administration, Dwight Eisenhower had overseen more than a million of people being added to the rolls of unions, more than a million people being added to Social Security being expanded with Social Security disability and other programs. It just went on and on and on through all these progressive things. What President Obama was laying out last night was not some leftist vision. I mean, you want a leftist vision? Go talk to the Castro brothers in Cuba. You nationalize all industry. You have the government run everything. Right? That's leftist. Obama is going to traditional, middle-of-the-road American values that are held by both Republicans and Democrats all across this country, just not held by Republicans in Congress, because the Republicans in Congress are the wholly owned subsidiary of the roughly 200 people who contributed about 40% of the billions of dollars that were spent in the last election, and the roughly 1,000 corporations that are highly politically active in the United States to the extent that they're funding major, you know, in a major way, funding Republicans for Congress. Incredible. This, clip number seven, I thought this was wonderful. This, in my mind, he was taking a whack at George W. Bush, as he did in his first inaugural. I was there 60 feet from him or 60 yards from him as he was doing it. And George Bush was sitting behind him and making faces, literally making faces at Obama while this was going on. But here's Obama, in my opinion, saying, I'm not going to, you know, thank God, the last 6 years, we have stopped the stupidity of the Bush administration. Here it is.
My first duty as Commander-in-Chief is to defend the United States of America. In doing so, the question is not whether America leads in the world, but how. When we make rash decisions, reacting to the headlines instead of using our heads, when the first response to a challenge is to send in our military, then we risk getting drawn into unnecessary conflicts and neglect the broader strategy we need for a safer, more prosperous world. That's what our enemies want us to do.
Right. And that's exactly what George W. Bush did. You know, Osama bin Laden predicted Bush's response. he knew what, you know, he was looking for a useful idiot in the White House. He got one, and ta-da, you know, we got what we got. So I thought that was cool, too. So, you know, when we come back from the break, I've got, you know, a whole bunch of clips here and individual comments and thoughts on a lot of the things that were discussed last night. I was not happy that he was pushing the Shafta deal, the so-called Trans-Pacific Partnership, the Southern Hemisphere Asian Free Trade Agreement. But beyond that, you know, I thought it was a great speech. And I think in a big way, really what he was doing was setting up the 2016 elections. You know, he is the head of the Democratic Party. When a party has has the White House, that president is the head of the party for all practical purposes. And here he is establishing, you know, from him. And if he can maintain his popularity, which is going to depend a lot on what happens with the economy, then this is a good launching pad for 2016.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 202-536-2370.
So we'll see where it goes, and we'll pick up your calls after the break. Interesting. Over at the Center for American Progress's blog, Think Progress, the official website for House Republicans has posted on YouTube a doctored version of President Obama's State of the Union address, which cuts out comments where the president was critical of Republican rhetoric on climate change, Think Progress has learned. In the website's enhanced webcast of the State of the Union speech, President Obama's comments criticizing Republicans for saying they're not scientists when it comes to climate change are erased. Wow. Similarly, by the way, and then I'm going to pick up your phone calls. This is not the end of all my rants or all our clips, and we've got 3 hours here to play with this stuff. But this morning, I was dismayed. I know I have a couple of friends who always refer to NPR's National Petroleum Radio, and Louise and I, we were listening. We were just, you know, tuning around this morning and listening to NPR and you know, Mara Liasson, their political reporter or White House reporter or whatever she is, I think main political person, is also a Fox News guest. In fact, they had to apparently change their ethics rules at NPR to allow her to go on Fox News all the time. And I don't know if she did this or if this is just. You know, no, it wasn't. Okay, Shano says it wasn't Marla. So I shouldn't pick on Marla Liasson here. So anyhow, my comment to Louise as they were setting the segment up, you know, they're going to get a Republican on who's going to talk about, I wonder if they're going to pick one of the very, very few Democratic senators who support the Keystone XL pipeline and then ask them about this. Because NPR has a history of basically not telling the whole story on Keystone and kind of sideways promoting it. And here's what I heard on the radio this morning. We've got the setup, and then the first answer we edited out because it was just about the speech, because it gets right to, the only reason that Heidi Heitkamp from North Dakota, a state that is producing oil that will go down the Keystone XL pipeline, and therefore North Dakota and Heidi Heitkamp are in favor of it, which actually makes a certain amount of sense. She's doing what her state wants. Right. But she's an outlier among Democrats, and which is a problem for the president. But anyhow, here it is.
All morning, we're hearing reaction to President Obama's State of the Union address. We're joined now by Democratic Senator Heidi Heitkamp of North Dakota. Welcome to the program. Let me ask you about something the president did not touch on, and I know concerns you coming from a state that has been having a big oil boom. That's the Keystone XL pipeline, runs near North Dakota. As a Democrat from that state, would you have wanted to hear about that? And would you?
I think he's made his position on Keystone very clear. I think it's our responsibility now as a Congress to say this process hasn't worked and to basically move ahead with our plans to approve the Keystone XL pipeline. But with that said, we don't know what the president's going to do. Secretary Kerry has set a pretty hard, firm date of February 2nd. I think we'll see what happens in terms of comments that come into the State Department. State Department, I think, ought to be, if they're not, embarrassed by a 6-year delay on this. And we'll see if they're going to expedite this. And then we'll will know what the president's actual position on the pipeline is. The veto threat really comes as a result of expediting the process.
And yeah. My point is, if I was producing the news and I wanted to get, you know, of all the things that he talked about last night, and there were many of them, really, Keystone? I mean, you know, the one thing that the Democrats don't agree on, and let's make it sound like the, you know, the Democrat that we're interviewing is going to. So, anyway, I just, my personal. Judy in Mount Joy, Pennsylvania. Hey, Judy, you wanted to comment on, oh, by the way, during the break, Judy, hang on just a second. During the break, Troy, who is Jim's wife, just had a baby this morning. And congratulations to Jim, and congratulations. I just pulled a brain fart. Molly is the daughter's name. Robin is his wife's name. That's right. Robin had a baby this morning. A little premature, but everything seems good. Jim called us at 20 minutes after 7 this morning and said, "Hey, you know, we just had a baby." It was really cool. Anyway, where was I going with that? Now it's, oh yeah, the bread bags thing. Troy, yeah, I started out with Troy. Thank you. This you can tell I didn't get a lot of sleep last night. Troy, who is works here also, was commenting about how when he didn't grow up in poverty, and when he was a kid they used bread bags, and Shana was saying he'd put bread bags on his shoes. And a lot of kids, and I was saying, I was remembering when I was a kid, the time that my mom would put plastic bags on my feet was those 3 or 4 days out of the year when you get slush. I grew up in Michigan. You get snow that's 2 feet tall. You can walk through 2 foot snow, you know, even with shoes. And you can walk through rain with galoshes, with rubbers, what we used to call rubbers. You know, they slip on your shoes. But you can't walk through slush. And so you put plastic bags. And I'm wondering, was this just like the obligatory, oh, yeah, I did something that maybe some poor people do. I don't know. Anyhow, Judy in Mount Joy, Pennsylvania, you're on the air. You wanted to comment on Jody Ernst and her bread bag thing.
Yes. When I was growing up, I'm a little bit older than you, Tom, but when I was growing up, and then when I became a teacher, the same thing happened in the 80s, which would have been Jody Ernst's timeline because she's in her 40s.
Yeah.
We put the bread bags on or plastic bags on over the rubber, over your shoes, so you could get the rubber galoshes on.
Right.
They were very hard to get on and off, as you recall.
Yes.
And so the plastic bags helped them slide on and off. And as a teacher, that was a biggie.
Yeah. Okay.
Because you had a bunch of kids in your room, help me get my boots off, you know. And so the plastic bags, we recommend it, actually, to families. So I don't know how much that has to do with being poor. Every kid in my room growing up, we did it because we hated getting those galoshes on and off.
Right.
And the other thing I wanted to tell you, it's T.S. Eliot's April is the cruelest month.
Oh, April is the cruelest month.
That is the poem, April, from the poem.
Yeah.
And I only know that because I had to take a lit class where I had to study T.S. Eliot's particular poem.
Yeah, I love T.S. Eliot. I used to have, We Are the Hollow Men. I don't remember the name of the poem, but I used to have it memorized. Now, no longer, but April, it must be a UK-based poem, because by April here in D.C., it's a beautiful month.
Yes.
Judy, thank you for sharing that with us.
Yeah. But anyway, I just want to say I enjoy your show, and I agree with you about President Obama. I don't feel he's left of anything. I wish he was stronger on public education, being a retired teacher. But I thought his speech was very good last night.
Yeah, it's a good start. You know, for an Eisenhower Republican, he's doing a great job. Judy, thank you for the call. I mean, you know, which is a modern-day Democrat in most cases. Paul in Woodinville, Washington. Hey, Paul, you wanted to respond to Jody Ernst?
No, yeah. You know, I'm getting tired of hearing the poor little Republican girl story. If you recall, last year, the response was given by Kathy McMorris Rogers from right here in Washington State, Eastern Washington. It was the same American Gothic essay of whenever she had to pick apples at 5 o'clock in the morning before school, and her father was a school bus driver. And frankly, I don't believe any of this crap, and it's insulting. It's insulting even to the average American intelligence.
Well, it may well be true, Paul, and if the intended message is anybody can grow up to be successful in America, being a member of Congress is not necessarily a success, at least in the on the Republican side, because all you have to do is sell out your values to a bunch of billionaires and they will put you in there, you know, as has happened, I think, in the case of these people. Without billionaire money, Joni Ernst would not be in the Senate. I really believe you can say that. I can say that with a relatively high level of certainty.
Okay, well, let me tell you what I doubt. First of all, Tom, she's 44 years old. She didn't start kindergarten until 1975.
Right.
She's she's 20 years younger than you are. So your story of walking to school in the 50s and even mine in the early 60s.
Well, and Troy is younger than either one of us. You're in your 20s, aren't you? Yeah, Troy's in his 20s, and he was wearing bread bags or plastic bags between his galoshes and his shoes so he could get them on and off more easily. And and that was, you know, 10 or 15 years ago. Or 20 years ago, whatever it is. I don't know Troy's exact age.
But she said, we only had one pair of good shoes. No kidding. Mom bought us one pair of good shoes and it was going to last us the school year.
I only have one pair of good shoes right now.
Exactly. Tom, I don't have any pairs of good shoes now. I only wear, like, running shoes and stuff.
I mean, I've got...
I have to go to something formal, I don't know what I'm... I don't have it. But this is ridiculous, and this whole idea that... And what's really insulting to me is that these little... You know, this is an essay. If you brought it to me, you know, like the kid in the Christmas story, it would be like C-. I'm sorry. And why I find it insulting is because she says... We hear this story, this American Gothic story, as if she grew up in the 30s. And then she says, we want to cut wasteful federal programs. Well, apparently she doesn't mean like the $500,000 in federal farm subsidies that her family got, but what the GOP does mean.
Well, and here's an incredible tweet from Kathy Sherwin. She says, as Ernst lauds virtues of plastic bags for shoes, she opposes raising wages for a waitress in Iowa holding her shoes together with duct tape.
Yeah. And not only that, I just thought about this, too. When she was growing up, this was before Reaganomics. This was when wages were fairly decent.
Right. And you know, she didn't say I was poor. She may, you know, I mean, Shane, Troy, we all grew up in the middle class, and we all put plastic bags on our shoes. So, you know, because we all lived in, you know, there was slush. Paul, thanks for the call. We'll be back.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Back with more on yesterday's State of the Union address and what it means for the future of America, where we're going, and what the Republicans are going to do about this over the next 2 years. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And Cliff in Claremore, Oklahoma, watching Free Speech TV on the DirecTV satellite. Hey, Cliff, what's up?
Two things. I just want to say hello. I just want to say that if Eisenhower was running as a Republican today, he would be kicked out of the party. That's first thing. Second thing is that this Rebecca Ernst, whatever her name is.
Joni.
Whenever the Republicans always talk about the simple life they had to live and the struggles that they had to live, well, then to me it just seems so condescending. I agree with you and I agree with the other two guys. It just seems to be so condescending, okay, to talk about how they had to go through struggles and everybody else had to live on welfare if they were struggling. Well, you know, the thing is, too, is, you know, I didn't necessarily have it so good either, but I'm not going to go run as a Republican and talk about how I'm going to go out and sell this country out simply by virtue of the fact that there's too many people living on welfare, and I had to pull myself by the bootstraps. Third, five words that Republicans always end their speeches with is this great country of ours.
Yeah, the greatest land in the world.
Right.
I think we're a pretty good, we're a pretty cool country. I mean, we've got a problem right now with oligarchs and billionaires, but I think we're a good country.
Oh, we are, but that's my point. But on the other hand, when they use it, it's almost like a bludgeon to use against people as if this great country of ours, it's always like ours, not theirs, ours.
Okay.
It's exclusive.
Yeah, I always thought that was a variation on the Nixon response to the anti-Vietnam War protesters. You know, they used to call them hate America people. You know, America, love it or leave it. That bumper sticker came out of the Vietnam War. The, you know, it was the right wing reaction to the Vietnam War protesters. And, you know, it so I don't know. But, you know, good point, Cliff. Cliff, thanks a lot for the call. Great to hear from you. Ed in Klamath Falls, Oregon. Hey, Ed.
Hi, Tom. I watched Obama speak, and I didn't hear anything of any substance. All he asked for was stuff that he knows is not going to happen.
And it was very modest stuff.
But it's still not going to happen.
Well, that doesn't mean you don't do it. I think he was, if nothing else, setting up the 2016 election, the debate.
Well, that's entirely possible.
He was making a very clear distinction. We Democrats are here for the average working person, and we're willing to take a small nibble out of the backside of the billionaires and the banks. And the Republicans, they're only there for the billionaires and the banks. That was the subtext of his speech, and that's why I think Republicans are so upset about it.
Well, he was calling for action on stuff that he knew that there was going to be no action on.
Right, which will highlight the fact that the Republicans are defending the interests of the billionaires and the banks, and the Democrats are trying to defend the interests of the American middle class, the American working
poor. To the few people that actually care enough to watch the speech and care about politics, and that's not a whole hell of a lot of people in America anymore.
Tragically, and I think, Ed, that's because, not just ever since Citizens United, largely ever since Buckley versus Vallejo, but ever since the Supreme Court allowed the corruption of public officials, people are getting it, you know, that the political game to a certain extent, to a substantial extent, particularly on the right, is rigged. And so why bother? I got it. Ed, thanks for the call. We'll be back. It's the True People's Media, the Tom Hartman program, and wee doggies, it is snowing here in Washington, D.C. It's amazing. Richard, driving through Texas. Hey, Richard, you wanted to comment on the president's speech last night?
Well, I wanted to make a comment. You know, the Republicans are slamming him on Keystone XL right now, but they're not mentioning how yesterday AP reported that the Republicans voted down two things that the Democrats had brought up to them that, if we're going to do Keystone XL, let's at least make sure that this and this happens. One of them is that the pipeline would be built with all American steel.
Right. That was Al Franken's proposal. Yep.
They voted that down, and they also voted down a proposal that everything that came through the pipeline would be used for product here in the U.S. and not shipped overseas. And they voted that down. And AP reported yesterday, coincidentally, there's a oil pipeline break under the Yellowstone River up in Montana. There's a whole town up there that can't use their drinking water because it's polluted with oil.
300,000 plus people. Yeah, you're absolutely right. And it's not getting anywhere near the press it should, frankly. Excellent points, Richard. Thank you very much for the call, and thanks for making them. Johnny in Lamarck, Texas. Hey, Johnny.
Hey, Tom. I just checked the thermometer out on the front porch, and it's showing 60, but it feels like 40 when I come back inside and I look through your front window onto the snow behind you.
Yeah. So you had some comments on John Boehner?
Yeah, John Boehner. I call him Boehner because that's what he is. He's not a Boehner. He's a Boehner. His body language when he – I just hate watching him at every single speech that Obama gives. When
I thought that was the most interesting part of the speech was watching Boehner's reactions. At one point, it looked like he started crying.
There's no camaraderie at all, nothing that tells you that they're going to support this president on anything. He begrudgingly gives him one clap one time, and the only time he stands up and Republicans stand up is to salute something military-related, like when Gabby Giffords got shot and almost died back in January 2011. Prior to that, they didn't accomplish anything. They take time wasting taxpayer time and money just sitting there. I could do a better job for half the price.
Yeah. Did you notice, by the way, that in front of on the table in front of or the flat part of the lectern or whatever it is that they're sitting at in front of Joe Biden was a glass of water. And in front of John Boehner was this long, it looked like sterling silver. It might have been glass. I'm not sure. But this long thing that looked like it had three round things in it. And I was wondering if it was a glass, a flask, and a decanter of water, you know, and you know, so that he could mix his own martinis while he was sitting there. I don't know what it is.
One last thing before I go.
Sure.
With people like Mary Landrieu and Heidi Heitkamp and former Virginia governor and now Senator Manchin and the Kentucky senator candidate whose name escapes me and senator from Missouri whose name escapes me, with people like that who call themselves Democrats, you really can't say that Obama is technically the head of the Democratic Party. You wouldn't know it by these people's words and actions.
Well, you've got
the House and the Democratic Party.
Yeah, I mean, Claire McCaskill and Heidi Heitkamp, the first job of a senator or a member of the House of Representatives is to represent their district. I mean, it's kind of politics 101. So I'm not going to trash Heidi Heitkamp for supporting Keystone XL, even though I think it's an incredibly short-sighted and destructive policy, because that's what the voters of her state want. And frankly,
well,
she would.
PR not doing its job anymore. Our job, or your job, is that much harder.
Yeah, but on the other hand, if you've got a national news organization and they're going to represent the Democrats in the Senate, you would think that they would pick a more representative Democrat. That was my shtick on this. But and that they would talk about some of the issues that are maybe they were just going for the blood. You know, if it bleeds, it leads. Let's figure it out. Anyhow, Johnny, thanks for the call. Doug in Newport News, Virginia. Hey, Doug.
Hey, Tom. I just wanted to comment on something I haven't heard anybody really talking about, and that was the Republican response by Joni Ernst. If you were watching MSNBC and probably NBC too, but I can't swear to that, they had this Bing chart down at the bottom of the screen. Like
yeah.
They did for Obama, President
yeah.
Obama.
Yeah, I found that so distracting during the Obama speech that I flipped over to CNN. It was like,
yeah.
It's making me crazy.
The point I was going to make was during his speech the entire time during President Obama's, and I'm going to make a comparison, he pretty much was in the 90s.
Right.
And that was with Republicans. I would say that the independents were slightly, but a little bit less pro speech.
Right.
You know, in other words, they were, you know, they might have been in the 80s.
Right.
Then when she rebuked or rebutted the president's speech, hers were exactly the opposite.
But that was MSNBC. Oh, I mean, had you been watching Fox News, it would have been the mirror image.
Yeah, but the Republicans on that chart were agreeable with President Obama too.
Yeah, yeah. Although, you know, that's really unscientific because anybody can say I'm a Republican, and that would be a good way to game a survey. You know.
Sure. Hey, and I'll tell you the truth. John Boehner. I like the other name for him too, but this guy is so transparent. He's just a drunk.
Well, you know, he's where he is. He's a very powerful man who controls a lot of money, and much of that money comes from billionaires and very, very large corporations. And that's just the reality of the Republican Party. It's the reality of John Boehner's political career. And tragically, it's the reality of the political career of so many people in Washington, D.C. And it's just, you know, a sad thing.
Yeah, their message, I'll tell you, their message or the lack thereof, I just don't understand how anybody can't see through the Republican Party right now.
Well, you know, they will drag out some wedge issues, and they will start talking, like Harry Truman said, they will start talking like Democrats. Mitt Romney already kicked it off. Hey, we got to be concerned about poverty in America after, you know, much of the poverty in America is the result of Reaganomics, 34 years of Reaganomics. Doug, thanks for the call. Interesting comments, getting everybody's observations. More on this and more right after this.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
Hey, friends, Tom Hartman here. Thanks so much for watching and listening to the program. The Tom Hartman Program is brought to you in part by the following underwriters. Identity Guard. Count on us to help protect what makes you, you. WIX.com. Everyone deserves to have their own website. ITMTrading.com. America's source for rare coins and precious metals. BostonBeer.com. Boston Beer, maker of handcrafted beers. Geico.com, providers of insurance. IdentityGuard.com, total protection. Quicken Loans, engineered to amaze. And EcoWine.com, your source for organic wine since 1980. These underwriters support our show, so please help by supporting the people who make this program possible. You can learn more at TomHartman.com.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. We were talking about the President's State of the Union address. He invoked World War II and how during World War II, we actually had a child care program that provided free child care for mothers who went off to work in the defense factories. And it was quite successful. And another one, by the way, just anecdotally, a similar one was passed in the 1970s. It passed Congress. Free universal child care, government-supported universal child care. Passed the Senate, passed the House, went to Richard Nixon, and he vetoed it, which frankly surprised a lot of Republicans because they thought that, you know, hey, we could be Santa Claus. This is a small, relatively small cost. But here's what President Obama had to say about that last night. This is clip number 3. Oh, okay. You got it? Clip number 3, please. Here we go.
Here's one example. During World War II, when men like my grandfather went off to war, having women like my grandmother in the workforce was a national security priority. So this country provided universal child care. In today's economy, when having both parents in the workforce is an economic necessity for many families, we need affordable, high-quality child care more than ever.
Yeah, and then clip number 5. I'm sorry, clip number 4, the other part of that.
It's not a nice to have. It's a must have. So it's time we stop treating child care as a side issue or as a women's issue. And treat it like the national economic priority that it is for all of us. That's why my plan will make quality child care more available and more affordable for every middle class and low income family with young children in America. By creating more slots and a new tax cut of up to $3,000 per child per year.
There you go. It's actually a tax credit, I thought, and not just a tax cut. But tax cut, of course, is language that's supposed to make Republicans stand up and salute. By the way, I mentioned that, what is that silver thing with the three little, round things in front of John Boehner, speculating that it might be, it could be gin and scotch and ice. I don't know. Joe Biden just had a glass of water in front of him. Turns out, Shane tracked this down, Polly Mosen's writing about this. What website did this come from? From Newsweek. Okay, thank you. That it is an antique ink stand and that the three little things in it are ink wells, and it was made in 1810, which is when James Madison was president of the United States. And it's placed on the rostrum before the speaker calls the House to order. Now, that does not mean that John Boehner has not replaced the ink in those ink wells with scotch or gin. We'll have to ask Bob Ney what John Boehner's favorite drink is. I think it's martinis, so that would be gin, right? But I'm not sure. So anyway, so much for that theory. We'll see. He also took a whack at George W. Bush. I mentioned this earlier, and we played clip number 7 on this. Clip number 8 follows up. I think this is the second time that he just kind of reached over and backhanded George W. Bush. Increasingly Americans are realizing that in the entire history of the United States, the worst president we have ever had, without partisan exaggeration, he took the most vacations. He had the largest security breach in history on his watch, 9/11. I mean, you could argue Pearl Harbor, but the world was at war when Pearl Harbor happened. That was George W. Bush, the worst president in history. And here's President Obama last night. In my opinion, now, again, I don't know what was in his mind or his speechwriter's minds, other than that, you know, we've taken our foreign policy in a different direction, but here he is.
I believe in a smarter kind of American leadership. We lead best when we combine military power with strong diplomacy, when we leverage our power with coalition building, when we don't let our fears blind us to the opportunities that this new century presents. That's exactly what we're doing right now. And around the globe, it is making a difference.
It is. And then in the meantime, and in particular, for example, with the president's negotiations with Iran, he is working with Iran, and he talked about this in his speech last night. He's working with Iran to try to, they have frozen their nuclear program. The United Nations acknowledges that. There are inspectors on the ground. We are coming to a rapprochement with Iran. And the Republicans do not want this to happen because it'll be a big win for President Obama as an international diplomat. And they don't want him to win in anything. They want his legacy to be as bad as George W. Bush's, which is why ever since the caucus room conspiracy was hatched on the night of his first inauguration, they have blocked everything. In fact, I was as he was walking into the chambers last night, right behind him was Kevin McCarthy, who was one of the ringleaders of the caucus room conspiracy. And I turned to Louise and I said, look at that, Kevin McCarthy right behind the president as he's walking in. You know, if I was a Barack Obama, I'd turn around and whack that guy upside the head. I mean, I would slap him in the face. How dare you do this for 6 years? You know, try to destroy me? You're harming your country? But, of course, President Obama, that's why President Obama is the president and I'm a talk show host. So, Bob Ney, who is very familiar with Iranian situations, Bob speaks Farsi, the language that they use in Iran. Bob, you've heard my stories about Bob before, and I want to get Bob on to talk about this as the week goes on. Bob just sent me this email, this note. This is a complete violation of protocol. When a foreign leader comes to the United States to address Congress or the American people, it goes through the White House. Foreign policy, according to the Constitution, is conducted by the president. The job of Congress is not to create foreign policy, it is to endorse it. You know, they approve of ambassadorial appointments, they approve of treaties, they authorize war, but the president has to ask for it. So, you know, the president last night said, don't mess with me on Iran. I will veto it if you try to, because we want these negotiations to work. So they're trying this slimy, backhanded path. John Boehner is. Here's the article. In a highly unusual move, Speaker Boehner invites foreign leader to address the House on a specific issue to lobby against the president. Prime Minister Netanyahu, without normal protocol of state and without the White House. House Speaker John Boehner announced Wednesday he is inviting Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu to address Congress next month about the threat from Iran, in a sharp rebuke to President Obama. Such invitations typically are coordinated with the White House and the State Department, but this one was not. The invitation comes as lawmakers weigh legislation supported by Republicans and some Democrats to tee up more sanctions against Iran in case negotiations fail to curtail that country's nuclear enrichment program. This is wrong. I mean, this is just wrong. And Boehner told Republicans in the House conference this morning He said the president warned us not to move ahead with sanctions on Iran, a state sponsor of terror. His exact message to us was hold your fire. He expects us to stand idly by and do nothing while he cuts a bad deal with Iran. Two words, hell no. Let's send a clear message to the White House and the world about our commitment to Israel and our allies. This is so wrong. To invite a foreign head of state to lobby Congress and the United States on an issue that has to do with the United States, not that foreign country. When did Israel start dictating U.S. foreign policy?
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
No country should be dictating U.S. foreign policy. It should be U.S. foreign policy. This is the United States of America. Welcome back. Dave, watching Free Speech TV in Canton, Michigan on DirecTV. Hey, Dave, what's on your mind today?
I was just calling about how President Obama's speech last night, that it really, he keeps wanting to use Band-Aids for what the Republicans have taken a chainsaw to our economy. And it's time that we return our federal income tax to its original intent and implementation. Now, when we first had the income tax, it was not meant as a tax on the average citizen. My proposal, something I proposed in 2000, is no income tax on the first $100,000 of income, 15% national sales tax, half of that to be used for national health care. I call it NIT, National Health Investment Trust. It's time for us to have national health care for people of all ages.
Oh, I don't disagree with your sentiment, and I think that raising the level at which Americans don't have to pay income taxes is consistent with the original. When the 16th Amendment was passed, the income tax that was put into place was, as I recall, 1% after you earned what in today's dollars would be about $1 million a year. It was, average people did not pay income taxes, federal income taxes anyway. You're right. But that said, if you do a 15% sales tax, what you're saying is that the average working person who spends 100% of their income is going to pay a 15% tax on every dollar that they earn, whereas the millionaire or the billionaire who might only spend 5% of their income is only going to pay tax on 5% of their income because that's what they're spending money on. The rest of it's going into investments or savings. And well, so, reasonable to me.
My point with the sales tax is that we don't tax people's needs. We tax people's wants. Now, you're from Michigan, and you know that we don't tax food here in Michigan. There's right. many things we don't have to tax.
Right.
We can make the tax only on those things that people wish and desire to spend their money
well,
on.
Well, we used to have that. It was called a luxury tax.
Well, this is a necessity. If you tax people's necessities, then that would be terribly non-progressive. What we want is a progressive sales tax, where we only tax people's wants and not their needs.
Okay, the way to do that, Dave, and this is something that I actually support, is to do a value-added tax, where at every stage along the way in a manufacturing process, you tax the increase in the value of the product. So, and this is how Germany does it. This is how Japan does it. South Korea does it. China does it. All the European countries do it. And that way you can reverse that VAT tax out on export and you can impose it on imports. So it works as a tariff. We're the only country, the only developed country in the world that doesn't use a VAT tax to replace the fact that everybody's dropped tariffs because of these GATT agreements, the WTO agreements.
The problem with the value added tax is I was in Britain when the value added tax was added in the 60s and it destroyed the Labour Party. And what happens is, government says prices are going up because of VAT, because what business is doing. And business complains that it's the government's fault.
Right. Well, at the point that you impose it, there's going to be a disruptive transitional period. There's no doubt about that. And for that, maybe you can scale it in. Maybe we can learn from the British experiment. But it's working very, very well for the Germans, the Japanese, the South Koreans, and the Chinese. Thank you, Dave. Past the hour. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. The president last night also recommended that we should allow anybody who can maintain a 2.5 grade point level upon completion of high school, and as they continue through college to go to junior college, or what used to be called junior college, community college, for free, two-year colleges. And because 40% of Americans who go to college go to community colleges, or at least start there. I did. My wife did. We both went to Lansing Community College. It's for people who don't have a lot of money, it's a great way to start out. And so, anyway, I had a caller on that topic, but it looks like he dropped off the line. Tammy in Chicora, Pennsylvania. Hey, Tammy, you wanted to go back. Oh, Tammy, hang on just a minute. Let me play. You wanted to talk about Jody Ernst and her bread bags, right?
Yeah.
Okay, let me just, I've got a clip of her talking about that. Let me play that clip, and then you can respond to it, okay? Hang on just a second. It's clip number 9, Shana. Here it goes.
As a young girl, I plowed the fields of our family farm. I worked construction with my dad. To save for college, I worked the morning biscuit line at Hardee's. We were raised to live simply, not to waste. It was a lesson my mother taught me every rainy morning. You see, growing up, I had only one good pair of shoes. So on rainy school days, my mom would slip plastic bread bags over them to keep them dry. But I was never embarrassed, because the school bus would be filled with rows and rows of young Iowans with bread bags slipped over their feet. Our parents may not have had much, but they worked hard for what they did have.
So, Tammy, your thoughts?
Well, I'm from northwestern Pennsylvania. I'm 52 years old. I did walk in the snow at least a mile back and forth to school, and the bread bags were not on the outside. They were inside your galoshes over your shoes.
So that you could more easily slip on your galoshes.
Yes.
And, yeah, and also to keep the water that might slip over the top of them. Yeah, there seems to be an absolute consensus on that. Three out of the four of us here in the studio today did that as kids. And I think Danielle didn't, because she grew up in Florida, right? So, gee.
But, she didn't give us any ideas of what the Republicans want to do.
Yeah.
And it was like a repeat of their rebuttal last year. They had a nice woman on there talking about the good old days.
Right. Right. Yeah, back when Eisenhower, who could have been a Democrat. In fact, there was a lot of speculation before Eisenhower ran for president about whether he would be a Democrat or a Republican, because as a military guy, he had always been apolitical. And he ultimately chose the Republican Party, I think, because he knew that would get him elected, because Truman's Korean War was so unpopular. But very interesting. Thank you for adding to the conversation, Tammy. I appreciate it. Jeff in Felicity, Ohio. It says that you disagree with Obama's speech.
Yes, on the economy, I do.
Okay, go for it.
I do not feel the economy is getting better. In fact, I think it's getting worse. You know, as far as he's a free trade guy. You know, he's tracked up almost eight trillion in debt. You know, if you look when he leaves, it's going to be $20 trillion. So the interest, if interest rates go to 5%. That means we could be paying $1 trillion on the debt each year.
Yeah. And this is the debt that is the consequence of Reaganomics, Jeff. Ronald Reagan tripled the national debt, and it has been exploding ever since. And let me add, I agree with you in this at a certain level, and Bernie Sanders would say this and does on this program regularly, that the real unemployment rate is not 5%, it's like 11%. If you include in people who've given up and aren't looking, and wages have been stagnant literally since the day Ronald Reagan became president. And that is not an accident, and there's no mystery to it. This is Reaganomics. And so, in one respect, the economy is not all that great. In fact, I wrote a book about this, The Crash of 2016.
Yeah.
I think all hell is about
to
break loose.
You're one of the last liberals that will speak the truth on this.
Well, thank you. On the other hand, the Dow is up 10,000 points since Obama came into office, and we went from losing seven.
It's because of 0% interest rates.
Well, I don't disagree with you. I don't disagree that much of this has been fueled by the Fed, and I think it's a bubble. That's why I think there's a crash coming. But the fact of the matter is that when he stands up and he says We have gone from losing 800,000 jobs a month to adding over 150,000 jobs a month for over 20 some odd months, you know, for years now. It's longer than that. It's almost 5 years now. This is the longest sustained recovery in American history. This is the best response. This is the best bounce back from a depression slash recession in the history of the United States. Now, I don't think it's sustainable. You don't think it's sustainable. And I think that a lot of it is being fueled by the Fed, and a lot of it's based on smoke and mirrors. And that's because we have not repudiated Reaganomics and we have not repudiated free trade. But when the president takes credit for his stimulus taking us from losing all these jobs to gaining jobs, he's right. And when the president takes credit for the stock market going up in part because of his policies, he's sort of right. I'm with you. It's more the Fed, you know, this super low interest rate. But, you know, let's give the guy his due. You know, he's
yeah. Well, I'm just worried he's going to ruin liberals' name. That when interest rates finally rise, it's going to crash, and then everybody's going to blame us.
Well, I share that concern, and it's going to and because I think in the next 2 years, and I think it could come as early as next week, or it could come as late as December of 2016, which is what I'm predicting in my book, that he will be actually able to hold off the wolf until the election is over, which is what Bush tried to do and failed. And Obama may not be able to do it either, because the pressures are building like crazy, not just in the United States, but all around the world. And, you know, look at China and look at Europe. Big, big problems. We'll see where this goes. Anyhow, Jeff, thank you for the call. I appreciate it. We're out of time here. You know, all that said, if John McCain had become president, if Mitt Romney had become president, if we had gone back to austerity economics in a big way, and we're still there, right? We're still operating under the sequester. We're still operating, you know, we're still in austerity economics. It would be so much better if we had, you know, an FDR kind of position.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 202-536-2370.
But keep in mind, for 6 years, President Obama has only had a filibuster-proof Congress for 72 days. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you, 28 minutes past the hour. And Greg Pallast is on the line, our old friend, friend of the show, gregpallast.com, his website. He's got a new piece up titled Trojan Hearse, as in those things that carry dead bodies, Greek elections and the Euro leper colony. And it's absolutely brilliant. You need to get over to gregpallast.com and read it. Greg is also an investigative reporter with BBC News and The Guardian. His latest book, Billionaires and Ballot Bandits, his film, Vultures and Vote Wrestlers, is now available on DVD. And again, as I said, you can find all of that at Greg Pallast. It's PALAST.com. Greg, welcome back to the program.
Glad to be with you, Tom.
Great having you with us. So, in your piece, you write that the euro is really just the Deutschmark with stars on it. I, in my book, The Crash of 2016, wrote that with the adoption of the euro, essentially Germany finally won World War II and took over Europe. And so I think we're singing from the same hymnal here. And that Greece's really only chance of survival, and I think, frankly, this is true of virtually all the, quote, peripheral countries, that is not Germany, not France, of Europe, is to bail out of the euro. Give us your riff on this.
Yeah, I mean, well, obviously they didn't read your book in Greece because they're panicked about leaving the euro. In fact, actually, my statement that they've got to leave the euro if they're going to save themselves to get away from German economic occupation was so shocking that my article, Trojan Hearse, you can read it in English at gregpallast.com, but it's in Greek on the front page of the big Sunday paper in Greece. They were like, really? We've got to leave, because what's happened in Greece, and we're told, oh, Greeks are just a bunch of lazy, ouzo-swilling, olive pit spitting people that just kind of hang out on the beach. No, of the 34 nations of the OECD, which means developed countries, they work more hours per year than any nation, including the United States. The laziest is Germany. Despite their wonderful PR, I guess they have a lot of extra time to come up with PR that they're the hardworking ones. That's not what's going on here. What Greece is a wonderful experiment at their cost in austerity. back in 2009, the United States of America under Barack Obama used something called stimulus. And so did our Federal Reserve, pumping a lot. China did it. Brazil did it. The United States did it. Three economies that avoided or got out of the recession by using stimulus, you know, by saying it's time for the government to step in when business is hiding under the bed, scared to spend money.
Right. When capitalism fails, government should take its place. And
yeah. I mean, you know, well, government involvement in Keynesianism is capitalism. It's just capitalism with like sanity and insurance against capitalism's failures.
Right.
In Greece, under the Eurozone, under German control, the Greeks were told when their unemployment shot to 10%, they said, we will save you. Just adopt these austerity measures, cut pensions, cut teacher pay, cut government pay, cut, social security. And they cut. And
cut back on your health care program. They cut it back to you can only be on for a year of free health care.
Yeah, die early. What happened was is that they did the opposite of the Obama program and stimulus, and they went from 10% unemployment to 25% unemployment. The unemployment rate the United States had at the worst days of the Great Depression in 1933. This is like, so by taking the so-called medicine ordered by the Germans, this austerity madness, austerity poison, they ended up with the 25% unemployment, with cut wages, and they've been selling off all state enterprises from their beaches to their water companies to their electric companies. Of course, you still have to drink water. You still got to pay. But now the Germans and others own it. This has been a disaster. The only way out to begin with is to get out of the leper colony. The party which is now in front, Syriza, has said, we can't handle this austerity. It is killing us. It's true. It's like bloodletting. And so the German response, which is to bleed yourself more, I mean, it's a medieval economic medicine. It's insane. He says, okay, we got to get rid of these leeches and bloodsuckers. No more austerity. But we promise we'll stay with the euro. You can't stay with the euro and not have these crazy austerity measures, because most people don't know, the euro has two rules. You can't have more than a 3% deficit. The U.S. went up to 11% during the recession. You can't have more than a 3% deficit, and you can't have more than 60% of your annual output in national debt. Well, the U.S. is way above that. Actually, Germany does too. But, you know, when you are in trouble, you need the government to step up to save capitalism from itself. Right. And under the rules of the euro, forget it.
Yeah, Greg, my take on, I've been watching this closely for some time, and my take on Syriza, why the party has been saying, and this party in all probability is going to win the election on it's the 25th of this month, as I recall.
Sunday. Sunday.
Yeah. My take on why they've been saying we want to keep the euro is that originally their position was we want to leave the euro, and there was so much blowback in Greece that I think that they said, okay, we want to keep the euro just to be able to get elected, but really deep down inside, they want to get rid of the euro and probably will do so. And it's things like your article, you know, that public debate that's going to happen once they win the election, that will probably cause them to bring back the drachma. What do you think?
Well, you know, the drachma was good enough for Plato. I don't know if Syriza really, I think, wants to stay in the euro, because the Greeks have been convinced that if they don't want leprosy, but they don't want to leave the leper colony. They don't want to leave the euro. They're told the sky will fall. Well, as I told them in my article, and this seemed shocking to them, I said, guys, 25% unemployment, your wages cut by one third. The sky has fallen.
Yeah, it's already fallen. And there are countries that are part of the European Union, the Scandinavian countries, the Great Britain, Turkey, who do not use the euro.
Right. Turkey, in fact, Turkey got lucky, wasn't allowed in the euro. And so they keep the Turkish lira, and they have a nutcase president who's awful.
Erdogan,
Erdogan. And even he can't destroy that economy. And what's happening is people go, the number one industry of Greece is tourism. But basically now Turkey has twice as many tourists, because you can buy your trinkets and junk and pina coladas in cheap lira as opposed to expensive euro. It's really insane to give up control of your currency, especially when you're giving it up to to right. the German and, finance minister.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Schauble or whatever, however you say
it. Schauble, which, by the way, I mean, it's like turning over your nation to John Boehner.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like, you really got to watch it. And the guy doesn't even have the tan to make up for it. Right. I mean, can't.
Speaking of which, Greg, you know, I totally agree with you. And there's two. Let's bring this back to the United States.
Yes.
Number one, these austerity policies that Germany essentially has imposed on the rest of Europe are killing European economies. And they are the same policies that the Republicans have been promoting here in the United States. In fact, the whole what was it called where they cut that, you know, the sequester. I mean, this was like right out of Euro 101 kind of, you know, politics. Number one, this kind of mentality is destroying our economy. And number two, in the 2.5-3 minutes we have left, I'm curious your take on the State of the Union address last night. That's the big topic for the day.
Yeah, well, keep in mind. Well, in fact, let's connect these two things. First of all, the euro was invented by a guy named Dr. Robert Mundell of Columbia University, who I knew, and he told me personally, he said, Greg, the whole point of the euro is to impose Reaganomics. Mundell invented both the euro and supply side economics, what even Bush Sr. called voodoo economics. If you cut taxes for the rich, get rid of government support, get rid of fiscal policy, get rid of all government owned industries. I mean, that includes your water supply. That somehow you'll have this great economic miracle. Well, we've seen the economic miracle of Greece going through the euro supply side voodoo economic stuff, which the Republicans are still trying to sell. In other words, they're saying, for example, from the State of the Union, the one, you know, Obama's obviously picking up the Piketty line, which is that, hey, how about giving working people a break on taxes? And you rich guys who are really making out like bandits, how about you pay something closer to normal taxes? Capital gains. In other words, here's the weird thing. If you work as a policeman, you get paid, you pay full tax on it. You invest in trinkets, in old hula hoops, and the price of the hula hoops go up, you pay a cheaper rate. You pay capital gains rate. Obama's saying, let's get the kind of speculation tax a little bit closer to the working for a living tax.
Right.
Now, how insane is that? I don't think that's insane. In fact, the thing is, what we find out from Greece is that when you give businesses the big break, your economy can go right over a cliff when you're making up for it by charging working people. It didn't work in Greece. It didn't work under Reagan. It didn't work under Bush. So now, why don't we learn something? You don't have to read Piketty. And you don't even have to, well, I hope you'll read my article because it's in Greek or English at my site. But, you know, the State of the Union last night was simply a call for kind of bits of sanity. Whether he means it or not, that's another discussion.
Well, or whether he can pull it off or not. I mean, that's even the bigger, or if really what he was doing was this was the opening salvo at the 2016 election, which I think there's something to be said for it. Fascinating stuff. Greg Palast, as always, you are the best. You are doing brilliant work, and your commentaries are so insightful, and you write so brilliantly. And your film, Vultures and Vote Rustlers, now available. Billionaires and Ballot Bandits, your last book. The new article, Trojan Hearse, Greek Elections in the Euro Leper Colony, all at gregpalast.com. Thank you, Greg.
Thanks, Tom.
Great seeing you. We'll be back.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
And we're going to check in with Bob Ney over at Talk Radio News Service in a few minutes, and we'll continue taking your calls through the next hour. Welcome back. 15 minutes before the hour. And Anita in San Antonio, Texas. Hey, Anita. Thanks for watching Free Speech TV on DirecTV. What's up?
Hi, Tom. You had a previous caller that blame the $8 trillion deficit on the Obama administration?
Yeah, debt, not deficit, but yes.
The deficit. No, he said the debt.
Yeah.
The deficit's a separate thing. But, that was caused by the Bush administration policies, like the $700 billion tax cut and the two wars. Remember, he kept those on like a supplemental budget?
Right.
And then Obama put them on a regular budget?
Right.
And that's why the deficit all of a sudden, or the debt all of a sudden increased.
Yeah.
His deficits have gone down every year.
Yeah,
he's
right.
Spending less. The only time he spent the one-time stimulus, which is a one-time injection into the economy, which is gone now. That, you know, so.
And put the economy back on track.
Right. Yeah. So it actually, you know, it decreased our
yeah.
debt.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And these right-wingers call and they give us, you know, five serial lies, and I can only grab one or two to respond to. Thank you, Anita, for pointing that out.
You're welcome.
Great job. I appreciate it. Shirley in Wheeling, West Virginia. Hey, Shirley, thank you for watching Free Speech TV on Dish Network. What's up?
Hey, I just wanted to tell you, you're my hero, and thank God you're there.
Thank you.
I had a comment to make about Joni Ernst last night.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, I think she needs to take a course in public speaking because she talked to us like we're fifth graders, but that's beside the point. But I wondered if you could verify something for me. On one of the Talking Heads shows, they said that the Ernst family farm got $400,000 in government subsidies.
Yeah.
So you can't tell me that's some little rinky-dink farm out nowhere if they got that. I haven't made that much in my lifetime, and I'm 68 years old. I'll be lucky to break 100 grand. They get that much in a subsidy. So I don't want to hear her poor mouth crybaby thing about where, as a matter of fact, as a Republican, I bet she sold those bread wrappers to the kids as they got on the bus for a nickel apiece. That's what I think. So I wish you would investigate that and let us know. Is that the truth? And if so, then how can she sit there and say she's worked in the field?
Yeah, here's the actual details. And the truth about her family farm's roots and living within one's means is more complex. Relatives of Joni Ernst, her maiden name was Culver, so this is about her family, not her husband's family. Based in Red Oak, Iowa, population 5,500, have received over $460,000 in farm subsidies between 1995 and 2009, the last year for which we have numbers. Ernst's father, Richard Culver, was given $14,700 in conservation payments, $23,600 in commodity subsidies by the federal government, and with all but $12 allocated for corn support. Richard's brother, this would be her uncle, Dallas Culver, benefited from $367,000 in federal agricultural aid, with over $250,000 geared toward corn subsidies. And her brother's late grandfather, Harold Culver, her father's and uncle's late grandfather, received $57,479 from Washington, D.C., again, corn subsidies between 1995 and 2001. By the way, Richard's construction company, now this, I guess, would be her father's construction company, was awarded $215,000 in contracts. When she was the auditor for Montgomery County, Montgomery County awarded that money to her father, including a federal FEMA grant of $204,794. That's the story. Thanks, Shirley. Welcome back to Minutes Before the Hour, and let's check in with the Talk Radio News Service, Bob Ney, with Talk Radio News, brought to you by GoatsForTheOldGoat.com and Free-Don.org. Bob, earlier on in the show, I read your email to me earlier today about John Boehner inviting Netanyahu to speak before the House, and ranted about how bizarre this is. But please, welcome, number one, Congressman, and author of Sideswiped, and number two, your thoughts.
Yes, Tom, I could have predicted it, but not actually even to this level. There is no question that the motive of John Boehner and John McCain are a little different. John Boehner wants to raise a ton of money by this visit. Frankly, there'll be the letters, mark my words, we can only stand up one way to defend Israel, and it's, the Republicans, not the president, et cetera. John McCain just has never seen a war he doesn't like, so he doesn't want any attempt at it.
Well, he's been singing Bomb, Bomb, Bomb Iran since 2000.
Right. This is the biggest foreign policy move literally for the world in three decades, and it only takes a few more months, and the president makes the deal happen or not. For the first time, we'll be able to actually gauge Iran's and control Iran's nuclear capability. But putting that all aside, in an unusual move that really trumps any debate on the State of the Union either way, John Boehner, normally you would go through the protocol to inform the White House of a foreign leader's visit and the State Department. That's the way it's done. And then the White House can't trump it. They can't veto it. They just get informed. Boehner just directly contacted through sources to the Prime Minister, has invited him to speak to a joint session of the Congress, not a joint session of like the President has, but a joint meeting of the House and the Senate. But Boehner has publicly said this is, he wants him to speak about Iran. So you have a couple of problems. One, the protocol is a hardball move that just breaks any form of protocol for the system there in D.C. Number two, you have a Speaker of the House that is admitting, and let's put it aside that it's Israel, who's our friend, et cetera, but is admitting that he is having a foreign leader stand on the floor of the House to lobby for that Speaker's interest against the President of the United States.
Right, and the in the Constitution, Article 2, Section 2, Paragraph 2, the President shall have the power by and with the advice of the consent of the Senate to make treaties, provided two-thirds of the senators concur. In other words, the foreign policy is entirely the province of the executive branch, the President, not John Boehner in the House of Representatives. He's spitting in the face of James Madison.
Oh, he is breaking every form of tradition or protocol. But on top of it, again, Netanyahu, like many world leaders, has spoken twice. That's not the issue. But I have never had in my mind a recall of us when I was there or before ever saying, by the way, we want this leader to come because we want him to help us pass a vote on the floor of the House as a foreign leader.
Right.
And that's exactly what's going on. And frankly, I'd take it a stretch further. If, in fact, a fundraising letter goes out about this situation from Boehner, I would really question the legality of doing that, of using the House podium and microphones to raise money.
Right, based on
a
foreign.
If he's principled, it's different.
Yeah, I mean, given Citizens United, it's entirely possible that billions of foreign money, whether it's from China or Saudi Arabia or whatever, have already flowed into our elections and are continuing to flow into our elections. And we don't know because it's being cycled through 501c3s that anonymize it. And also you've got Fox News, the second largest stockholder in Fox News is a Saudi sheikh. So, you know, arguably you never hear a bad word about Saudi Arabia on Fox News. You never hear about how they're beheading people in the public square every week. Basically, ISIS is mini Saudi Arabia. You just don't hear it. The influence of foreign countries on this country is anyhow.
And I would note on this issue, Saudi Arabia has literally beat its fist down at the United States and the President over talking to Iran, has beat its fist down out in the United Nations.
Right.
So there's a lot more to this.
Yeah, it might have something to do with Fox News' opposition to it.
Yeah, so, there's something out there. So I just wanted to mention, this is not just a little thing. And again, anybody's free to address, but calling a foreign leader to specifically help pass a vote on the floor of the House is in itself extremely unusual to even, I guess, you know, admit it.
I'm surprised Netanyahu would do it.
I am too.
It seems crass.
But by the nature, well, he's up for election, as I understand.
Yes,
so,
yeah, he is.
But, you know, it would be interesting if a member of the Knesset would invite President Obama to come speak there in the next week. I don't think the president would do it. It's interfering with a vote.
Right. It's using a foreign leader to interfere with domestic politics. It's just something that's not done.
And he can have his opinion, and he can state it, and he can come. It's a free country. But to actually utilize him at the podium is it's Tom, I just can't tell you how unusual it is.
Yeah. By the way, I was watching that silver inkwell in front of John Boehner last night during the State of the Union address and wondering, it's been there since 1810, apparently, wondering if he has replaced the ink in the inkwells with gin or bourbon. What does he drink and when does he start drinking typically?
He's a Merlot guy. And again, I'm the last to criticize people for drinking issues as I had them, you know, but he's a Merlot guy, pure and simple. And, and if I would remember, unfortunately, which wine he drank, I would buy the stock.
I see.
No question about it.
Okay. We have just 1 minute, Bob. What else is going on in the world?
Well, I wanted to mention this as they talk about, you know, the middle class and the president raised that issue. There's a new study, the Southern Education Foundation. And the federal data reveals a trend playing out in the nation's public schools. For the first time in American history, more than half of all school children qualify for free or reduced cafeteria lunches. And I mentioned that Southern Education Foundation study because, you know, it's on the rise. So it does tie in with, you know, equality, equity. The economy, you know, is rebounding, as the president said, but there are disparities amongst people. So nearly half of the states with the highest concentration of poor students are in the South, Southwest, but Western states like California and Oregon are also on the verge of joining them.
Wow.
To this report.
Remarkable. Bob Ney, Congressman, thank you so much for dropping by today and for writing your brilliant book about John Boehner and Washington, D.C. and your life in Congress, Sideswipe. It's a masterpiece. Bob Ney with the Talk Radio News Service. Thank you, sir. We'll be back.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
Hey friends, Tom Hartman here. Thanks so much for watching and listening to the program. The Tom Hartman program is brought to you in part by the following underwriters. Identity Guard. Count on us to help protect what makes you, you. WIX.com. Everyone deserves to have their own website. ITMTrading.com. America's source for rare coins and precious metals. BostonBeer.com. Boston Beer, maker of handcrafted beers. Geico.com. Providers of insurance. IdentityGuard.com, total protection. Quicken Loans, engineered to amaze. And EcoWine.com, your source for organic wine since 1980. These underwriters support our show, so please help by supporting the people who make this program possible. You can learn more at TomHartman.com.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back. 6 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. Last night in his State of the Union address, the president called for net neutrality. He did, he said we need to keep a free and open Internet. What does that mean? How does that work? Well, you got John Thune out there coming up with this, what I think is a phony net neutrality bill. He's calling it Title X or Title 10 because Title 2 is genuine net neutrality. It's been applied to telephone companies for 60 years, and basically what it says is you can't listen in on someone's phone call and charge them a different price depending on who they're talking to. And if that happens, and if that is applied to the Internet, it will mean that that Comcast, which is run by one of the most right-wing families, owned by one of the most right-wing families in America, can't observe where you are going on the Internet and speed up or slow down or charge you more or less for going to, say, the Daily Caller versus Think Progress or the Independent Women's Forum, IWF.org, versus DemocraticUnderground.com. But Carrie Lucas, I suspect, would take issue with my characterization of this. She is the managing director of the Independent Women's Forum and the co-author of Liberty is No War on Women. Her newest article is titled, which is over at the IAWF.org blog, What's at Stake for Women in the Net Neutrality Debate. Carrie, welcome back.
Thanks so much for having me on, Tom.
So here's what I don't understand. Why John Thune and these other Republicans, why are they more interested in doing the bidding of seven multi-billion-dollar corporations in the United States than in what's in the interest of the American people?
That's not a loaded question.
No, it's a genuine question.
Well, you know, I think, you know, it's funny the way you kind of describe it, because obviously this is a complicated issue. It's really easy to get lost in the weeds. There's so many different players on who is the regulatory agency and what's the correct comparison. And, this is the first time I've heard it really compared to listening in on a phone call. It's because we all know that the Internet isn't really like a phone. It's very different. It's not just a question of who's calling you and what are you talking about. The question is what kind of data is coming through.
How is that different?
It's very different because, you and I can talk and my voice is going to be just as heavy or take just as much bandwidth as anybody else's. But it's very different when we're talking about if somebody's streaming video versus if they just want to read, you know, they want to read articles.
Well, hang on just a second, Carrie. Let's just define terms here. What the president is calling for is what's called Title II status under the FCC laws, which is called common carrier status. You have the same thing in trucking. Common carrier status means in the trucking industry, for example, if you're moving and you're still living in Europe. I'm not sure where you're calling from, but you know, you've moved around a fair amount. When you move, the trucking company, they can charge you different insurance rates, right? But they can't say, I want to know if this hutch that we are moving or this coffee table that we're moving is a $5,000 antique, in which case I'm going to charge you a lot more to move it, or if it's just a $50 IKEA table. They charge you based on the weight. And that's the only way that they can charge you. That's called common carrier status. Just like with the telephone company, you can be charged on the number of calls you make or the number of hours you make, but not on who you're calling or why you're calling them. They used to be able to do that. There used to be an exception to the common carrier status where they could charge you more for business calls. Remember that?
Yeah, but Tom, you certainly can pay more on how fast you want that delivered.
Sure, absolutely. Right? You pay for content. For volume. Excuse me. But that's consistent with Title II. That is part of Title II.
Well, but the idea that you can kind of pick and choose in the same way we've been able to, and we haven't as much as you would hope, been able to pick and choose what kind of packages you want on television. You know, that's, you know, I don't have to pay for HBO,
which is not a common carrier. Right.
But that's what
Comcast wants to do. They want to make it so, here's your basic internet package. It's $35 a year. If you want to be able to visit news websites, that'll be an extra $10 a year. If you want to be able to stream video, that'll be an extra $30 a year. If you want to visit the porn sites, that's an extra $70 a year. If you want to, you know, whatever. And they want to do it the same way that cable is done. And that is, it seems to be crazy.
Why? I don't understand why that's crazy. If I don't want to, have to pay extra. I don't want to have to pay extra too.
And that's what the Comcast wants to do. They want to charge me extra.
But Tom, this is the type of thing. I think the mistake is always made that you assume if you outlaw price differentials, that means everybody pays less. No, it means some people pay less and some people pay more.
Depending on how much they use.
You know, it's making it so we all have to have the same, same groceries in our grocery cart. This is, you know, that's not how it works when it comes to
groceries. Are not covered by common carrier status under any circumstances except when they are shipped. And when they are shipped, again, you know, you get a package of groceries coming to you via Amazon.com. You know, the UPS delivers it, and they're going to charge based on weight, not based on whether you're ordering, you know, fancy Turkish figs or canned beans.
Tom, what I don't understand here is I don't understand, like, what if I think that, you know, when you talk about government, you know, it's funny because I know one of the other topics we'd considered talking about as a part of this is what has happened in terms of states and localities working together with business to limit competition in the broadband. I think that, like, one of the problems with all this is that you need to recognize that when government gets involved, the government doesn't always, you know, do the right thing. We want to have competition.
But government often does do the right thing, Carrie.
Okay, it sometimes it does, sometimes it doesn't, but there should be, you should have a real reason to have government come in and say, this business can't offer this type of service. And I just don't understand why it is, what it is that we're so afraid of to allow companies to offer people different packages.
I'm afraid of Comcast. I'll tell you, I've got, you know, Comcast and Verizon are our two internet service providers here in Washington, D.C., and our service sucks. And when we try to get any kind of help from them, we get blown off. We're paying five times what they pay in France for one third the speed. I'm afraid of these big corporations. That's why I want my government to protect me from them.
Okay, and so you think the government is going to come in and run things better than the private?
No, the government's not going to run them. If government says that telephone calls are part of common carrier status, or trucking freight or goods or vegetables or whatever, it's common carrier status, or the internet is common carrier status, all that means is that the trucking company can't say, we're going to charge you more because we you know, think we can get more out of you because of what you're shipping. The telephone company can't charge you more because we think we can get more out of you based on who you're talking to. Gee, she really likes to talk to her mom. Let's charge her more for talking to mom. We'll make that the mom plan. And similarly, if you're going to go on the internet, you can't charge you more just because you want to visit the Independent Women's Forum at IWF.org.
So, but I'm flabbergasted by this. So what I don't understand, if we do have, if we need to, you know, think about how to make a more competitive marketplace when it comes to having more providers.
Right. But there's a great way to do that.
So do you think that, government's going to come in and create a better internet? How are private companies going to invest in the infrastructure that we know it needs to be able to maintain broadband?
The way that they do in South Korea and France and countries all over the world. The easy way to do that is to, just like with the phone companies, say you're a common carrier, which also, and I would add to it, any internet service provider can go over anybody else's copper.
And, you know, Tom, I find it strange. We always have this conversation about Europe being this paradise, and I am living still in Europe. I'm in Berlin, and it is there's many lovely things about it. But I don't know why we would think, you know, I've spent a lot of time in France. I lived in Belgium, and you know, I had lots of internet problems. There's very little competition, and things broke all the time. It's not better than what the service I certainly had in Washington D.C. I don't think it's this paradise of when you walk around Europe, you don't think, wow, everything is working like clockwork here.
I'll take your word for it, Carrie. maybe I shouldn't use that argument. But anyhow, Carrie, it's always a pleasure talking with you. Carrie Lucas, the Managing Director of the Independent Women's Forum, IWF.org, the author of Liberty is No War on Women. Thank you, Carrie, for dropping by.
Thanks for having me on, Tom.
And say hi to Deutschland for me.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
We'll be right back. 15 minutes past the hour. We'll get back to your calls about the President's State of the Union address, where we're going from here, what the President can expect from the Republicans. Welcome back. 15 minutes past the hour. And Bob in Holland, Michigan. Hey, Bob, what's on your mind?
Hey, Tom. Just calling about the State of the Union last night and the one mm-hmm. part where the President mentioned raising the minimum wage.
Yeah.
The part of the state I live in is very conservative, and I'm kind of a minority here. You know, if you've ever lived on the bottom part of the pay scale, you understand how hard it is.
I have, and I do.
You know, also with the social programs that the right wants to get rid of, 3 years ago I was in an accident. I'm a paraplegic. I'm a father of two. I have a 15-year-old son and a 5-year-old daughter. And trying to raise them on less than $800 a month is stressful. I'm sorry. I'm a little choked up here. But it's tough, you know.
Yeah.
And like Bob Ney was saying about the free lunch program, my son gets that at school. And, you know, it's been stereotyped. I almost feel embarrassed for him. He's never once complained. He's a great kid. But I just, you know, you never hear anybody's voice like mine that is actually on it and needs it. All you hear is about these people that are taking advantage of the system.
Yeah.
You know, if we got rid of every government program that has fraud in it, we'd have none. And
well, you know, and similarly, if we got rid of every corporation in America that has fraudulent business practices, we'd have none.
Amen, brother. You know, and, you know, I just want people to understand the struggle that we go through. Last year I got a $6 a month raise in my disability, and I lost $50 a month on my bridge card for food, which again, a lot of people don't understand. It's just for non-taxable food. I can't buy shampoo. I can't buy soap. I can't buy laundry soap. I can't buy medicine. You know, and I just want to put it out there that, you know, we need to raise wages. It's hard. Starting wages around here are the same as what they were almost 25 years ago when I graduated high school.
Mm.
And, you know, we just can't make it. And I want to say thanks, Tom, for sticking up for us and, you know, keep going.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Bob. And I wish you the very, very best. And keep going yourself. You're doing great work. Raising kids is tough work, and it's God's work. Thank you, Bob. Thank you for your
thank comments. You, Tom.
Yep. Cindy in Euclid, Ohio. Hey, Cindy, you want to talk about Keystone XL? We have about a minute before the break.
Okay, Tom. I just wanted to say that they really cannot guarantee that there won't be a break, a leak, a trickle, or an earthquake causing problems. You know they're going to low bid all the construction. It goes right over the Ogallala, which is really a matter of national security, if you think about it, because it feeds our ranchers out there. It feeds our crops out there. It's absolutely foolish to put that right over the Ogallala. They don't know where all that groundwater that feeds it comes from exactly. Some of it is, I'm sure, from groundwater,
yeah,
as most aquifers are. It's a ridiculous concept to put it straight down the shortest path to Texas. Yeah. You know darn well it's mostly they want to war with Russia for oil and win the hearts and minds through supplying most oil,
yeah,
for the rest of the world.
Yeah, yeah, no, I'm totally with you, Cindy. I think it's insane, but it's going to make the Koch brothers a lot of money. So, you know, we'll see. 20 minutes past. Thank you, Cindy. 20 minutes past the hour. Welcome back. Tom Harbin here with you. 20 minutes past the hour. Mike in Palmer, Alaska. Hey, Mike, how's Alaska doing these days?
Well, let me put your phone here. It's actually been kind of cold here the last few days. No, I had something to say about this Republican-led House and Senate. It's like, well, gee, are we going to be led down another primrose path into a few more wars here in the next few years? Or are they just to wake up quick because we are being turned into slaves, I believe, is they won't do anything about the minimum wage. You know, there's just nothing to be gained by the Republicans leading our country.
Yeah.
And that's basically all I have to say. And thank you so much for your show. It is excellent. I love waking up.
Thank you
so much.
Thanks, Mike. And thanks so much for watching on Free Speech TV. I appreciate that. I would agree with everything Mike just said, except that I think that we use the word slave labor at our risk. It's like comparing things to the Holocaust. It diminishes the Holocaust. I don't want to diminish the horrors of slavery. That was a Holocaust also. But we are certainly, we're seeing people at a subsistence level. We're seeing people at a poverty level. We're seeing people who are close to being indentured servants based on their student loans or their debt or their inability to keep up with the cost of living. I mean, you know, some really serious stuff going on here. And Mike makes a great point on that. Donald in Oak Park, Illinois. Hey, Donald, thanks for listening to WCPT. What's up?
Yes, hello, Tom.
Hey, Donald.
Yes. Let me get you off a speaker.
Okay.
You know, what really gets me about this whole thing, too, this Iran thing again. Now, all of a sudden, that's coming up into the news again that Iran, they're going to put sanctions on Iran. Here I thought everything was going well. You know, we're becoming the biggest threat to the world peace than any other country. I'm so sick of this stuff. We destroyed our relationships with Russia with all these sanctions, which I think were kind of unfair. I think if we would have kept Russia on our side, they would have probably helped us in a lot of other things, too. We keep pushing the buttons of all these countries. We're making more and more enemies, and it doesn't seem to be stopping. And I am so fed up with it. We will end up in some kind of a war, a major war, if this doesn't stop. If I had it my way, I'd say let's pull all the troops out of the Middle East. And you know something? If ISIS starts threatening all those other Arab nations, let them take care of it. Let's get the heck out of there and stay out of their business. And that calls for Israel too. They've been trying to get us in wars with different parts of their countries that are surrounding them since I remember '66 when they bombed a U.S. freighter.
It was an intelligence gathering ship. Yeah, it wasn't the USS Liberty, I think it was.
It was a spy ship. Right, 34 soldiers got killed that day,
right.
And they denied it. They denied it. And then even the pilots, Israeli pilots, came out and said, we didn't want to do it, but they were ordered to. They knew it was a U.S. vessel.
Yeah.
And this is what kills me about this. And American people are so stupid. They don't listen to what's going on, and you don't need a degree in political science to listen to these crackpots and know where they want to take us. I mean, it never seems to end. And I've given up on all these politicians, too.
Yeah.
You know, everybody talks about the fear of the terrorist groups that are existing right now. I don't fear them at all. I have more fear of our politicians. They could destroy us without dropping a single bomb or even firing a single bullet, and they could do it slowly at a slow death.
Yeah. I would not go so far as to say we're the greatest threat to world peace. I think the United States has been a force for good in many ways in the world. But, you know, the Bush foreign policy, which has been inherited by the Obama administration, and really our foreign policy going back to arguably to the mid-19th century, a kind of colonial foreign policy, and then our policy of genocide that goes back to, you know, the 17th and 18th centuries, a genocide against Native Americans, have not been wise policies. They've not been productive, healthy policies. They have not been consistent with the values that we say we are based on. And I would go so far as to say that. And I do think that the Republicans are trying to push us into war. There's a lot of money to be made in war, and the Republicans are the shills for the big corporations. And this is what Dwight Eisenhower warned us about. Donald, thank you for the call. The other thing I would add, and I point this out in my book, The Crash of 2016, that just came out in paperback, is that if you look at these, you know, these 80-year cycles, you know, the old saying that is often attributed to Arnold Toynbee, that when the last man who remembers the horrors of the last great war dies and only the glories of the war are remembered, the next great war becomes inevitable. And that works out to be about 80 years. It takes about 80 years for everybody who remembers the last horrible world war to be dead, or the last horrible war. And 80 years ago, we had World War II. 80 years before that, we had the Civil War. 80 years before that, we had the Revolutionary War. And so there's a very real possibility, and I would say maybe even a probability, right, to be somewhere between the edge of possibility and probability, that the economic collapse that the entire world is being set up for by the banksters and by the billionaires, the Mitt Romneys of the world, that crash may well lead us to World War II. And I'm very concerned also about the situation in Ukraine possibly being a flashpoint for World War II. So anyhow, Kelly in Los Angeles. Hey, Kelly, got a minute to the break here. It's yours.
John, I think you were mentioning that. I think you meant World War III. We're coming to World War III.
Yes. We do. Thank you.
I wanted to go back to the Independent Woman's Forum lady. They talk about a euphemism. Independent doesn't enter into it because it was.
Well, let's not pick on Kerry. What's your point?
Well, no. But I mean, the operation was founded by the same from the same funders and the same operation that created Americans for Prosperity. It's a Koch-operated and organized operation. But talking about her point, the reason why government ends up in these sectors is because society decides that we need it, like education or health care, and the commercial sector can't figure out a way to make a nickel on it. That's why we had the TVA, that's why we built the Hoover Dam, that's why we're trying to put internet into places like...
Excellent.
You're
Thank
listening
you.
To the Tom Hartman Program. Call 202-536-2370.
Kelly nailed it. We'll be right back. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Just checking in on the chat room here. Oh, people talking about Davos and Nick Terse. Oh, lots of interesting stuff. You need our free live chat room, TomHartman.com. Just FYI. And let's see. David in Berkeley, California. Hey, David, welcome to the program. What's on your mind? Thanks for listening to Sirius.
Hey, Tom, how you doing?
Great. What's up?
I want to talk about the net neutrality and the guest that you just had on. She kept saying that she was confused as to how she just doesn't understand what you were talking about. But the way I see it is that with my cell phone, I pay for 3 gigabytes of data. I expect to receive 3 gigabytes of data. It doesn't matter if I want to watch a stream a movie. As a movie may take up 500 megabytes, but that's my data that I had paid for.
Right.
I don't understand how they can't grasp the concept that data doesn't have a label. It doesn't matter where you go. It just matters that you have access to it all at whatever rate that you are paying.
Right, and at the speed that you're paying for. For example,
exactly.
I have uh, I I forget if it's Comcast or Verizon. We have Verizon here, right? And no, we have Comcast here. So I have Verizon at home, I guess. I'm not sure. Louise handles our bills at home. So, but whoever we have at home, I have this, you know, just over the last 6 months, whenever I try to use a VPN, a virtual private network, where the what it does is it takes your internet data off to some server someplace else in the world or someplace else in the United States, and that becomes the origination point, and it prevents your local internet service provider from knowing what you are doing on the web, so that, you know, and very often people do this because they have privacy concerns. Sometimes they do this because they want to download porn and they don't want their local provider to know it. Some, you know, whatever. And increasingly people are just doing it because they're just offended by the fact that their internet service provider is keeping track of everywhere they go and selling that, you know, aggregating that data, presumably because someday they're going to start selling it, and probably in some cases already are. Some people think that VPN will even keep the NSA out of their stuff, although I doubt it. But what I've noticed is that if I turn on VPN at home, my download speed suddenly drops from 20 MIPS to 5 MIPS. They're throttling, you know, people who are using VPMs, virtual private networks, and that shouldn't be. You know, Comcast shouldn't, or Verizon or whoever it is, shouldn't punish me for not letting them know what it is I'm looking at online.
Exactly. And you brought up the comparison with shipping. And I thought that was brilliant, because if you want UPS to deliver your package the next day, you're going to pay extra for that faster delivery. If you want faster speeds, then yeah, you pay for faster speeds, but it doesn't matter what the package is. It doesn't matter the website you want to go to. It's all the same.
Right. If you order a $1 million diamond that weighs 3 ounces, you're going to pay for 3 ounces of shipping. If you order, yes, you know, $10 worth of beans that weighs 10 pounds, you're going to pay for 10 pounds of shipping. It has nothing to do with what's in the package. And that's called common carrier status. And that's all Obama's asking for, is for the FCC to designate the internet as a common carrier for the internet service provider.
My jaw dropped with the amount of times that she said that she just doesn't understand.
Well, I think that on the right, they've done a really good job of confusing the issue for a lot of people on the right. I don't know about Kerry, but I think that I know that I've debated this with a number of conservatives who really don't understand the concept of what a common carrier is. And most Americans don't understand what the concept of a common carrier is, because it has literally been 50 or 70 or probably more years since we had a debate in this country about common carrier status, because the last time it was used, it was applied to trucking and to telephones. And, you know, it's to rails. I mean, the common carrier concept goes back to the late 19th century. One of the reasons that this thing started was because John Rockefeller, when the Standard Oil Company in the 1880s, I read this amazing biography of John Rockefeller back in 1999 when I was writing Unequal Protection, or 2000. And what he was doing in Ohio, when he was operating out of Ohio, and in Ohio, West Virginia, and Pennsylvania, was he was going to the railroads, and he cut a deal with the railroads where he said, I'll give you a certain amount of volume of shipping, and I'll guarantee this to you, and if I don't even use it, I'll guarantee you the money. In exchange for that, I want you to charge all of my competitors twice what you're charging me. And he essentially drove all of his small competitors into bankruptcy and then bought them up. And that's how Standard Oil got as big as it was. And he did it because back then they didn't have common carrier status for the railroads. He did it by colluding with the railroads to charge people based on who they were rather than what they were shipping. And that led to the first common carrier laws in the United States, which happened, I believe, during the Teddy Roosevelt administration, the first progressive laws. I may have my timeline wrong on that, because the biography I read didn't go into a long rant about common carrier status. Mm-hmm. But it, you know, this is the reason why you need it. And I'm telling you, you know, Comcast, Verizon, AT&T, these companies, they want to be the Standard Oil of Ohio from the 1890s of today. And we should not let them do it. It's wrong. David, thank you for the call. Excellent point. Jack in Studio City, California. Hey, Jack, what's up? You want to talk about the SHAFTA, the Southern Hemisphere Asian Free Trade Agreement?
Hello, Tom. Yes. I thought his comments trying to tie the benefits to the middle class to going ahead with SHAFTA in spite of the fact that it wasn't popular were somewhat disingenuous in that he has the opportunity to offer at least with lip service to amend those provisions that are clearly unconstitutional and not in the interest of anywhere in the world where corporations can step in and assume judicial scope.
Yes, I agree. And the him you're talking about, I'm assuming, is President Obama last night in his State of the Union address. I would not have a problem with Shafter with the TPP if they did two things. If they did it, if they did it constitutionally, the Constitution explicitly says that the president can negotiate treaties with foreign nations, but they have to be approved by 2/3 of the Senate. It takes six in the current Senate with 100 people. It would take 67 votes and it has to be debated. And I mean, the debate part isn't in the Constitution, but it's implicit in the approval part, the advice and consent. So if he wants to negotiate Shafter TPP, bring that agreement before the United States Senate as a treaty and have an open debate of every section of it. Let the American people see it. And then have the Senate debate it. And the reason why I don't have a problem with that is because there's no way he's going to get 2/3 of the Senate to approve this thing. And Americans would be horrified if the stuff that we've seen leaked so far. I mean, there's a reason why they're negotiating this in secrecy. There's a reason why, you know, Peter DeFazio came on this program and said that he had seen part of the TPP and he couldn't talk about it. He said, you've got to go into a room. You can't take notes. You can't take a camera. You can't take your phone. You read it. And then afterwards, if you talk about what you read, you go to jail as a member of Congress. So, this is just crazy. Jack, thanks a lot for the call. I'm with you. Jason in Odessa, Texas. Hey, Jason.
How you doing?
Good. It says here you're a right-wing military guy who wants to discuss Obama's State of the Union with the left. Do I have that right?
That's the topic that they made me go with. So
okay, so go for it.
First of all, I respect all aspects and different sides. I think that's what makes us a great country.
Thank you.
Me
too.
The State of the Union. I really didn't even want to talk about the State of the Union, but the address last night was pretty much. I mean, you know, I watched John Boehner back there. He pretty much lied to America. And
Obama did?
Republicans did. No, John Boehner.
Oh, okay.
They talked about this big change they were going to make, and that's why they got everybody to go out and vote Republican. And I'm not going to blow smoke, man. I mean, you know, you're a left-winger. You believe in what you believe in. You believe in, you know, subsidies. You believe in things to make people all around better people. I don't believe in that. I believe in the right-wing perspective. But I respect your point of view. And in fact, that's what I defend the Constitution for.
Okay. So what is it that you wanted to debate or discuss?
I really wanted to discuss why John Boehner and the right wing, they decided that they were going to lie just to get votes, and they're not doing anything better than what Nancy Pelosi and Harry Reid are doing.
Well, you know, welcome to the wonderful world of politics, Jason. The problem is, here's the problem, and this is how both you are getting screwed and I am getting screwed, Ben. It's the result of the Supreme Court's decisions about, you know, money, about whether or not politicians can be owned by billionaires and corporations. And the problem is that when you look at the interests of the top 1%. They are well over 80% of the time what gets made into law. When you look at the interests of the bottom 99%, the probability of them being made into law or not being made into law is unmeasurable. In other words, the opinion of public opinion has virtually no effect anymore. And this is something that's relatively new since the 1980s. Public opinion has no effect on legislation. Legislation is being driven by big corporations and billionaires, left or right. You take your choice. And that's not how America should be. That's called an oligarchy, not a republic. And, I share your concern for our country and your love for our country. Jason, thank you for the call. It's great to hear from you. Hopefully we can have a little more finely tuned and precise discussion next time about a particular topic. But I look forward to our next conversation. It's 15 minutes before the end.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
And when we come back, I got to tell you what happened at the Supreme Court today and what the president had to say about it. Stick around. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you, 15 minutes before the hour. And Stanley watching Free Speech TV in Tyler, Texas. Hey, Stanley.
Yes, sir. Good to talk to you again.
Thank you. What's up?
First of all, I'd like to compliment Danielle and Shane on doing a great job while you were out.
Thank you. They just heard you, and I'm sure they appreciate it, too. I very much appreciate having them here. They are so good.
Yes. In my opinion, they were the best subs you've ever had, but that's just my opinion.
Thank you. We'll stick with them.
Good. Yeah, I'm glad to hear that. I have a problem with Obama's timing on his coming out as a progressive. First of all, I think he's a very intelligent man. He's Harvard educated. He didn't get to where he is right now, not being intelligent, not knowing what's going on, and operating under those evaluations of what's going on.
Yeah, I think we can safely say that unlike George W. Bush, who was brought into power by a machine, that Barack right. Obama was brought into power in large part by his own intelligence and initiative. I agree.
Exactly. And what he convinced other people that he was, what his beliefs were and what he was capable of doing or intended to do.
Right. I hear a butt coming.
Yes. Yes, a big butt. Now, we've talked about him before, so you kind of know how I feel about him. I voted for him twice, both times, under the hope that he would step up to the plate and do what he said he was going to do. He was elected on progressive platform, but he did not become explicit about that platform until he absolutely knew that there was no way it was going to be enacted. He on his very last election, the midterm, he did not come out with the immigration changes until after the election.
Right.
He could easily have changed possibly one or two.
The Democrats begged him not to do it before the election because they were afraid it was going to hurt them in the election. I mean, we're talking a few months here. But President Obama, I mean, he's been in office 6 years now, and he's been calling for an increase in the minimum wage for, as I recall, all six of those years.
Right, but he has not been calling for it the way he called for it today, or yesterday, rather.
No, I think that $10.10 thing he rolled out at least a couple of years ago. I mean, that was, in fact, I think maybe Pelosi rolled that out from the get-go.
Right.
And it got filibustered in the Senate.
Right. Pelosi,
so how can you blame the president for not being able to pass legislation for not passing legislation when out of 6 years he has had 72 days where he had a filibuster-proof Senate?
I understand. My point is that he had an opportunity to be very explicit. I mean, this was a wonderful speech, but it was a speech.
Yeah.
If this speech had happened 4 years ago, it could easily have changed the dynamics of the Congress and the Senate.
Stanley, you're forgetting his previous State of the Union speeches because they have all been very progressive and they have all been criticized as you know, he's a socialist, he's a communist, you know, by the right. But... you know, I get what you're saying. Thank you for the call. Okay, welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Today is the fifth anniversary of the Citizens United decision at the Supreme Court. And this is from CNN. As today's court opened, Chief Justice John Roberts was preparing to announce the day's opinion when he was cut off by the first protester who shouted, "We are the 99%. Roberts then tried to joke our second order of business today until he was cut off by a second protester. According to Professor Garrett Epps of the University of Baltimore, who was in the court, a total of between 5 and 7 protesters stood up shouting statements such as, "Money is not speech," and "Overturn Citizens United." At one point, according to Epps, after all protesters had been led out, Roberts said, "We will now continue with our tradition of having open court in the Supreme Court building." Now, here's the statement from the president about this. The White House issued a statement based on about Citizens United, 5th anniversary. Quote, "Our democracy works best when everyone's voice is heard and no one's voice is drowned out. But 5 years ago, a Supreme Court ruling allowed big companies, including foreign corporations, to spend unlimited amounts of money to influence our elections. The Citizens United decision was wrong, and it has caused real harm to our democracy. With each new campaign season, this dark money floods our airwaves with more and more political ads that pull our politics into the gutter. It's time to reverse this trend. Rather than bolster the power of lobbyists and special interests, Washington should lift up the voices of ordinary Americans and protect their democratic right to determine the direction of the country that we love." Wow. MoveToAmend.org. Check it out. Brian in Davenport, Iowa. Hey, Brian, you wanted to talk about the state of the
union? I'm going to get you off the speaker here.
Sure.
I'm tired of holding the phone right here. Well, the thing that you just hit here on the Supreme Court decision on that, you know, I believe it might have been your show or kind of, you know, back with Wisconsin had a law on campaign contributions.
Yes.
Most of our states did in the 30s.
Yes. I read that on the air last week, the old Wisconsin law.
Where it was absolutely, you know, illegal for any corporation or anybody that worked for that corporation, you know, they dissolved the corporation.
That's right.
Well, I think we need to do that at the federal level.
Yep. I agree. Federal well, we law. Did. I mean, you know, a citizen.
I don't remember what they called that, but every state had one similar up until.
Yeah, it was called the Tillman Act. It was passed in 1907. Teddy Roosevelt lobbied for it, and it was overturned in 2010 by the Supreme Court in Citizens United.
Yeah, and that should, because we do have more, you know, I checked on this a few years ago, and we have more foreign governments passing laws in our country than we do Americans.
Well, I don't know if that's true, but there certainly is a lot of foreign influence.
Some Associated Press or, you know, it was a few years back we looked into that, you know, some people here, we just kind of did some checking and that was kind of what we came up with is, no, in fact, yeah, there are more foreign bodies throwing money in and passing laws in our country than Americans are passing laws.
Yeah. Well, it may well be, Brian, and as the president just pointed out, and he said, including foreign corporations to spend unlimited amounts of money. You are singing the president's song on this fifth anniversary of Citizens United. Brian, thanks for the call. Mike in Chula Vista, California. Hey, Mike.
Hey, good afternoon. I just want to say we're a military family, Navy, Marine Corps, and we don't agree with subsidies for corporations, but for people, small business, yes, we do.
Cool.
This is the evolution of thinking. And I can respect conservatives, like old school conservatives that supported unions and people. We just kind of like our tax money to go back into people and not, I guess, you know, spending money killing brown people overseas. It just gets old.
Yeah, I'm with you. Mike, thank you. Thank you for your service to our country, and thank you for calling and sharing that story with you. It's great. Rolando in Granada Hills, California. Hey, Rolando.
Thank you, Don. The subsidy, Obama's speech was astonishing last night, you know, trying to unite the nation, that's what we really need.
Yeah.
Not to separate.
Yeah, the high point of that speech was when he said there's only one America, you know, when he went through
exactly.
that little riff.
And that's the way how it's supposed to feel in the crisis that we have now, that we're facing, you know. I like the way how they changed the Republicans and when he's talking about the environment, you know.
Yeah.
It's not about this little pipe. And it's like you have to realize people around that it's not about a special issue for us, you know, one group specific.
I agree. Rolando.
All humanity.
Rolando, do you speak Spanish?
Yeah. Do you read the article from the New York Times Friday about the ocean, how the ocean
Yes, how the extinction in the ocean. Quick question for you. Did you watch the Spanish language version of the State of the Union rebuttal by the Republicans last night?
Yes, a little bit. But it's, I still feel the great amount of caution that Obama took in this speech. You know, and the way how he talked is not reading the speech. It's something inside. It's coming from inside, you know, really.
Yeah. Well, he's the final speechwriter. I mean, he's got the final say in the speech, and he helped organize
it. That's the way how we're supposed to feel now in the crisis that we have.
Yeah.
We have to wake up about this this really issue about this extinction that is real.
Yeah, I'm totally with you. Rolando, brilliantly said. I just have 30 seconds left, and I want Kevin. Kevin, you've got a bumper sticker here for us in Sunnyside, Washington.
Well, not necessarily a bumper sticker, but yeah, it probably would make a great one. It's regarding that TPP. My comment is if you're not at the table negotiating something like TPP, it's because you're on the menu.
Yeah, there you go. And the American people are not at the table. The American people are not even allowed to know what's going on, and members of Congress are not allowed to know what's going on. That is brilliant, Kevin. That is brilliant. Thank you for calling and sharing that with us. So, another day. Another day slides by faster than I expected. Oh, man. We're having a good time. And we will continue tomorrow. And don't forget, democracy is not it really and genuinely is not a spectator sport. Too many, you know, about two-thirds of Americans think democracy is a spectator sport, and it is really hurting our country. It's time for all of us to get involved, to get active, even if it means just, you know, making phone calls periodically or joining an organization like MoveToAmend.org or Democrats.com or .com or whatever it may be. Get out there, get active, tag, you're it. We'll see you tomorrow.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, visit TomHartman.com.
Hey friends, Tom Hartman here. Thanks so much for watching and listening to the program. The Tom Hartman program is brought to you in part by the following underwriters. Identity Guard. Count on us to help protect what makes you, you. WIX.com. Everyone deserves to have their own website. ITMTrading.com. America's source for rare coins and precious metals. BostonBeer.com. Boston Beer, maker of handcrafted beers. Geico.com. Providers of insurance. IdentityGuard.com, total protection. Quicken Loans, engineered to amaze. And EcoWine.com, your source for organic wine since 1980. These underwriters support our show, so please help by supporting the people who make this program possible. You can learn more at TomHartman.com.